This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep in New Orleans beneath the giant clock on the St. Louis Cathedral. This famous clock stopped during Hurricane Katrina. It was still stopped when President Bush used it as the backdrop for a speech. Now, as we record this almost a year later, the clock is just a few minutes past midnight. It's our starting point for the next 24 hours, one day in the life of New Orleans. It's the early hours of Wednesday morning. The Rebirth Brass Band is playing the Maple Leaf Bar in a neighborhood that escaped the flooding. Outside, a caterer works the busy sidewalk, grilling meat that you can smell down the street.
And we have like pork chops, hamburgers, chicken breasts. It's all French bread.
That's quite a selection for 1 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I mean, in New Orleans, you try and do a variety of things that they all like.
As we'll hear throughout this day, New Orleans residents have more limited choices when it comes to remaking their lives. The caterer calls himself Biddles. Biddles with the Vittles, a man with a red T-shirt and a pile of black hair. He works until closing time, then returns to the only remaining home in his extended family. He lives with his mom. Do you know where you sleep tonight?
On the floor. On a hard wooden floor. When I leave here, I go home and sleep on a hard wooden floor.
Dawn reveals a city that moves to a different rhythm. Some workers hammer, and others demolish houses. One wrecked home fills about 3 large trucks. It's hard to appreciate the scale of what's happening until you see it from above. After 7 o'clock on Wednesday morning, we step onto a New Orleans drawbridge. It lifts us like an elevator. We stand above a canal. Black barges are reflected in still water.
Unfortunately, what we see is a mess.
We stand on the walkway with Mark Schlefstein of the New Orleans Times-Picayune. He co-authored a book on the failure of the levees, like one below us, that is now patched with a concrete wall.
The canal itself is still busy with shipping interests, but the communities surrounding it are pretty much gone.
We're on this immense steel drawbridge. And as it climbs, we're beginning to get a broader and broader view of New Orleans. What's this neighborhood over here?
That's the Lower Ninth Ward. And as you can see, there a lot of the houses that were right up against that wall are now gone.
From horizon to horizon, you see this city's uneven struggle to come back. Neighborhood by neighborhood, street by street, every wrecked home has a story, including somewhere out there, Mark Schlefstein's own.
I was there over the weekend mowing my lawn in front of the flooded house, the only one on my block who is doing that. It's frustrating. I was out there for an hour and a half before I heard anyone else in that neighborhood walking around or doing anything.
It's not unusual to hear stories like one that ran in Mark Schlefstein's newspaper on this morning. It's about a newspaper photographer who was so depressed that he tried to force policemen to kill him. Okay, so we've now left the Florida Avenue Bridge and gone down into the Lower Ninth Ward near that levee bridge. You can see houses that have floated off their foundations and are still sitting there in a pile. You can see houses that are vacant. There is a little more traffic. We're going to see a man who has been rebuilding his house and who is determined to return, even though he'll have very few neighbors. His name is Ronald Lewis.
And we got us a jacuzzi bathtub. And my wife's going to have a nice big walk-in closet. This is our last hoorah.
His house was so clogged with debris that he could barely move in it, let alone move in. So Ronald Lewis grabbed every helping hand that reached his way. Volunteers install windows with a nail gun. Architecture students redesigned his backyard museum. It's dedicated to New Orleans black social clubs. People planted dozens of sunflowers in his polluted yard.
I spoke with my wife on the telephone last night and I told her possibly Monday or Tuesday she'll be able to come back into our home.
A housing group got him cheap flood insurance, which he needs since he did not raise his house off the ground. Neither did the man we're visiting near midday.
11:14, sitting in my house, what's left of it.
Donald Bordelon refused to leave his house in St. Bernard Parish, even when water filled the first floor. He and his wife, Colleen, are still replacing wiring and walls.
We're going out, huh?
I got to get shoes on. It's hot.
Too hot, huh? Makes it a little harder, man. New windows, you know?
They lead us to the newly repaired roof, where we can study the wrecks of home after home whose owners will not come back.
Because they know it's going to come again, you know? Sooner or later, it's coming again. You know, every time a storm comes, you're going to think about it, you know? You got to get your stuff ready, you know? You got to have food, you got to have water, you know? People, yeah, listen, this crazy guy, he's going to stay again, you know? I ain't saying I'm crazy, but, you know...
Can I just point out a truck just went by, and it's whitewashed with the words, "Just Married." People seem to be getting on with it.
Oh, yeah, why not, you know?
Yeah, day by day.
Yeah.
The owners of that truck aren't the only ones starting new lives. Later on this day, we meet a young couple preparing to get married in the St. Louis Cathedral.
Well, we wanted a traditional New Orleans wedding, and that is the place to have it at.
At 2:15, Phil Farrow is trying on the tuxedo that his fiancée, Sarah Shipman, chose.
You sure it's not going to clash with anything you wear?
Mm-mm.
I wouldn't want to do that.
I picked it out, didn't I?
Hurricane Katrina forced Shipman to flee the New Orleans area, though she hopes to return. Others are losing that hope, like a woman we reached by phone in Houston.
Hi, Maisha.
Hi, it's Steve Inskeep. How are you? Maisha Margin was also planning a wedding for this month. It was put off indefinitely by the disaster. In Houston, her fiancé now works up to 15 hours a day as a truck driver. As we speak, at almost 9 o'clock in the evening, she's still waiting for him to come home.
He called me earlier. He was lost, and this city is so big, it's real easy to get lost in, and it's so much.
Is life better in Houston in any way?
Yes, it is. The education for my children is so much better. The residential areas are so much better. The crime is not an issue where I'm at or whatever, and it's a bigger city, more opportunities. So I don't want to go back. My only reason to go back to New Orleans would be for my family.
Can you get a good beignet in Houston, Texas?
Yeah, right. No. No.
This week, a survey estimated New Orleans' population at much less than half its number before the storm. We're ending our day in New Orleans, back at the Maple Leaf Bar. Another midnight is approaching, and a few customers order drinks during the performance of a group called Jealous Monk. We found the owner at the end of the bar. In the days after Katrina, Hank Staples was fending off looters. Today, almost 1 year later, Staples is fending off more mundane problems.
An ordinary day. Well, we're having problems with our toilets, and the plumber didn't show. Post-Katrina, that's so ordinary in New Orleans, I can't convey that to the rest of the country.
Just as he does most nights, Hank Staples will go to bed long before the Maple Leaf Bar shuts down. He lives directly upstairs. It says the noise never disturbs his sleep. He's got a high tolerance for life's irritations, which is something New Orleans residents need day by day.